put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's going to bring back a College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
The Must Buskin trademark, Tommy.
He's got a sister that is in the clothing business?
In Dallas.
And I think he really wants to print shirts with the name on it. I think he's got some family that's familiar with trademarked or in the clothing business to create the kind of things that would have his trademark on it. Generally, anything you want to trademark with your likeness or image or any of those things would be property of the university. So I'll be interested to see if we even find out what the direct arrangements are, because generally anything you do to make money off your name as a head coach as part of your contract generally goes to offset your salary. So, but you're right. It's better for him to have control of this from his vantage point. And I don't think he's worried about what people in the media say or using the term must bus. I don't think he's going to have his hand out if we use the term must bus. We better use it a lot now before it gets issued, I guess. I think he just doesn't want us coming up with a smart aleck plan to go print T-shirts that say must bus on it, and then he can't stop it.
In this article, it talks about how their neighbors, Eric and Danielle Musselman, with the owners of BN Limited, and they've already designed a shirt. I know Danielle wore it at one point last year. That's out. You've seen other companies mm-hmm. do the exact same thing. You mentioned his sister, Nicole. She's out of Dallas. She works in the clothing industry. She's worn shirts like that as well. But it's interesting because something's like stuck. Now, the left lane hammer down, if Arkansas would have won, that would have stuck, period. But they didn't win. And I know Arkansas basketball didn't have the best season this past year, but a lot of people are excited for Arkansas basketball. You have a top five recruiting class, according to ESPN. It's not just Razorback fans that are excited. It's a lot of SEC basketball analysts and college basketball writers around the country that see the light at the end of the tunnel for Razorback basketball. And you haven't been like down in the abyss by any means, but you haven't come out of the tunnel comparatively to where you were. And it's important to have some sort of brand. Now, it can be simple. I mentioned Sam Pittman's just yes, sir, which is absolutely fine. As long as fans like it, players like it, and potential recruits like it, then you should like it.
As long as it's associated with winning.
With what?
Yeah, with winning. As long as it's associated with winning and not embarrassment, it will work. I mean, we didn't come to paint stuck for a while.
Yeah.
You know, that phrase doesn't say a lot about football or anything else. Must bus says more about him. Yes, sir. Well, it makes me think of Vern Lundquist, but that's me. But, yeah, I mean, all of these things need to be tied either directly or loosely to winning. Winning is all that matters. Hashtag win.
It's a big deal. This
the only deal.
This trademark is expected.
Not a big deal. It's the only deal.
To be approached in the upcoming weeks. So expect to see that approved. And I don't. You probably know about this process a lot more than I do.
I just know. Well, I've never trademarked anything. We just violate trademarks. There's lawyers that specialize in this. There are attorneys that their entire practice is around copyright and trademark laws and getting things done. You can do a lot of this if it's a simple thing online yourself, but anything more complicated than that, you probably want to engage an attorney.
In the application, the idea for this is to make hats, sweatshirts, T-shirts. I think he's just wanting to market that. And I've seen, and I'm sure a lot of you've seen, the different designs. I know that the Arkansas student section, a lot of the students got a bunch of shirts. I think it gets Kentucky, but there was another shirt that just had the must bus. We've seen the BN Limited ones. We've seen the ones that his sister Nicole has made. So it's been widespread. And he doesn't, according to this article on talkbusiness.net, he doesn't seek exclusivity with BN Limited, but I know that the relationship with Danielle and them, because they live in the same neighborhood, they're friends, they're going to be a big part of that.
Again, part of generally the language inside every coach's contract gives more or less exclusive rights on things like this to the university, but it's generally, you know, associated with, you're not going to go out and do a TV campaign for XYZ business, get paid $100,000. That $100,000 counts towards your
paycheck,
guaranteed salary that the foundation guarantees legally. Generally, that's how this works. I don't know exactly if there's a loophole for this or if this falls into that, but I would imagine the university will have rights to this trademark while he's employed here. And that's the thing he wants is, I don't imagine, you know, only he can speak. I don't imagine he minds the university using this to sell shirts and whatever on campus. But what he wants is, once he leaves, he owns it. And wherever the next stop is, if he wants to use that again, he could. Right? And that's the way I would look at it, at least.
And you bring up an important point, because if you go back to a lot of the videos that Arkansas used pregame, if you go back to a lot of highlights, there was a lot of must-bus used in those said videos. And you bring up another good point. When he leaves, let's just be honest. And I will say this on the record right now. It's May in season and a half into Eric Moss. That's about right. Season and a half.
One completed season.
Yeah. He will not retire here at Arkansas. He will not retire here at Arkansas.
It's going to be close.
He will not retire here at Arkansas.
I'm not going to argue with you on that because I think the odds are in your favor. But I don't think it's like 80-20 or 90-10. I think it's a little closer, or maybe I want it to be 60-40, 70-30 on something like that. Mainly because I look at his age. And I look at his kid's age, his youngest daughter's age, Mariah. You know, moving your kids at certain ages in school, it's a hard thing to do. But, you know, he's not as young as he looks. If you didn't know, you would guess him to be what, in his 40s, early 50s? And he's, I think, 56, which isn't old, but you're not
55.
Okay. He is, I didn't know if he'd had a birthday yet this year. He's not dawning a new career here. This isn't a young up-and-comer 30-something.
I know.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I mean, I'm just saying, how many more years does he have to coach?
I'm just telling you right now, as much as Arkansas fans would hope this is going to be the case, he will not retire to Arkansas.
But you know what that likely means? He had some success at Arkansas.
Listen, I'm not going to put money that he's not going to have success. But I'm just telling you right now, and he's listened here before. I wonder if he's listening right now. Eric Musselman will not retire at Arkansas.
Coach, I'm just saying, I'll take after this pandemic, I might need an extra large rather than a large. No. So,
nice shirt. 877-37.
Kyle uses Schmedium.
No, I need an XL too, because I'm growing the other way, unfortunately.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
We got a $200 gift certificate to Gregory Jewelers. We've got $50 to Sisters Flowers. We got $50 to Cash Saver 870. We got about $400 or so in total prizes, but the main prize is the $200 Gregory Jewelers gift certificate. So it's bound to fit mom and make her happy.
Yeah, you can enter to win, and then you don't have to buy your wife or your mom a Mother's Day present.
You got a couple more to... I think that's one way you could look at it. I don't think mom would appreciate that.
Well, that's one way you could end up... Your marriage could end up in a divorce.
So go to hitthatline.com, and you'll see all sorts of places to enter, including right there at the top next to where you listen live. It says that enter Mother's Day giveaway 2020. If you're on the phone, just hit the menu box and you'll see it there. So go into the website, you'll see ads all over the place that you can click and enter there. So it's on our social media. There's no excuse. You have no good excuse for mom if you don't enter this. You can enter once a day, every day. We'll declare a winner on Sunday and we'll announce it on Monday. That's the Mother's Day giveaway 2020 from hitthatline.com and Ty Richardson.
And some of the people are a little skeptical. It's like, I don't want to have to type in a bunch of information. It literally takes 30 seconds.
Yeah.
30 seconds. You don't have 30 seconds for the woman that you came out of her womb for? I mean, like, come on.
That's a little graphic.
Well, I mean,
that was a little graphic.
Like, let's be honest. Like, no one has experienced as much pain as your mom.
Are you okay
has.
This morning?
Hey, Jenkins, cancel that omelet I'd ordered.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just, I mean, I'm just being honest. Sometimes you have to have a pretty descriptive.
I think you achieved that.
I mean, I'm just being honest. That's what I do on this radio station is sometimes it's a little. It jumps over the line a little bit, but let's just be honest. The pain that your mom suffered is more than any pain we've ever gone through in our entire life. So let's just be honest about that.
So all one right. of the all right,
well, you were very honest,
very very honest, very honest. That's what I am for ESPN Arkansas. Honesty is what I hold true every single day. So speaking of moms, Danielle Musselman is the first lady for Arkansas basketball, and we've talked about this sparingly on this program, but there's always, well, I say that a lot of times in a marriage, there's the cool spouse and the kind of nerdier spouse. Like for your marriage, Mrs. Laura is the cool spouse.
I'm saying, which one, you didn't even have, I didn't even get to ask the question. No. Which one do you think I am?
Of course not. Mrs. Laura is the cool one. And you know, people like Mus and stuff, but Mus, and I like Mus too, but Mus has even been on the record that he does a lot of embarrassing stuff. And if there's a cool spouse in that relationship, it's Danielle.
Yeah.
Now, there are some marriages where both spouses are just nerds, and neither fits in that category. Whoever unfortunately has to marry me one day, they will be the cooler one of the relationship. But I think it's, if you go through her timeline and stuff and just look at some of the things she's helped out with, not only with Nevada, but here at Arkansas already, you've seen how much of an impact her fingerprint is on stuff. This is a former TV broadcaster, worked at ESPN at some point, has a lot of connections in this industry like Eric does. This is important. This is one of the most important things that's not talked about enough when it comes to Arkansas basketball. And she went on the Pig Trail Nation a couple weeks ago. Here's a 45-second audio clip from her on being involved with the basketball program.
I am involved, and it's because I absolutely want to be. You know, I want these kids to feel like this is their second home. Just last weekend, we had a few guys that called and were like, hey, coach, can we come over? And that's what we love. You know, that's why we bought this house with the pool, and we have space because we want it to be an open door. We want people to come over all the time. So whether it's kind of dealing and managing our current players or helping my husband with meeting new parents mm-hmm. and new players, I'm really involved that way. And then, you know, we have a huge staff. And so in continuing that family atmosphere, that means making sure that all of those people are involved and connected as well. It's just always something. You know, there's a lot of different aspects to the job that I'm involved in, and I honestly, I really like all of them.
So I remember a conversation that Justin Stepp and his wife were talking about how recruits knew their entire family. Cortland, his son, I'm forgetting Justin's wife's name, but Justin, it was a family process. You've seen the exact same thing with Arkansas basketball. In just 1 year, Mariah's involved. Michael obviously coaches for the team. It's a whole family in this. And you think about some of the most successful men in the history of the United States or right now, typically, now this isn't the case for everyone, but typically they have a loving wife who impacts them in some sort of way. And Danielle is a perfect example of that. Eric would probably tell you, and I don't know if he's ever said this or if this would be the first time, how much Danielle, how important she is to his coaching season. That's because she thinks of things from the TV perspective, as a background that's worked for ESPN and other TV stations, and that he wouldn't necessarily think of. He doesn't have that lens because he's just been coaching his entire life.
No, I think coaches' wives play a role that we don't appreciate enough. It is a great tie-in here on a Mother's Day, because you mentioned the recruiting aspect. Let's just look at that. When families come in and players come in with their moms, they want to be put at ease. Someone like Danielle Musselman, someone like Jamie Pittman can put you at ease. And because you're handing your child off to somebody, and you say, oh, that's just a phrase people use. You're handing your child. I mean, the only thing I can really compare it recently in my life is when I took my oldest son, who's now 10, he's in the fourth grade, to kindergarten the first day. And I remember I left the show early that day. I wanted to be there for that. And I was handing my child, and I remember walking out the door as he was 5 years old and sitting in that cafeteria, and I could see the the fear on his face, and he, you know, and it broke my heart, you know, to see him grow up and do that. It's the same thing with, I mean, it's the same emotion. Now the kid's not going to be at home. You're not going to see him every day. You need a female figure to put you at ease as a parent. That's the role a coach's wife plays as well.
A mother is a very important part, and you think about some of the moms that like are very partial to their kids, and most of them fall into that category, and so they're handing off, and then a lot of times it's not just they don't live in Fayetteville, so they can't see him every day. They're driving hundreds of miles away, so it's not just like an easy drive up to campus to see the kid. It's doing that, and that's kind of what she provides, and that is, as you're saying, a mother figure. You mentioned Jamie Pittman. You've seen some conversations with former Sam Pittman players, how she's had an impact with them, and I think of it, we were talking about in the first segment, the must-bust marketing perspective. You know, I don't know if she necessarily spearheaded that, but she was a vital part in doing that, because as a background in media, particularly in television, she knows the importance of branding yourself. And Eric Musselman, since arriving here, has done a fantastic job. The thing about Nevada, he was able to stand out at Nevada despite not having any basketball history. Can you name the best player in Nevada off the top of your head?
No.
No. It's probably Cody or Caleb Martin. That's, and who they play for? Eric Musselman. I can't tell you the illustrious history of Nevada basketball because there isn't any.
I'd have said Stacey Augmon and Larry Johnson. They played in Nevada, but not at Nevada.
At UNLV.
They played on the other end of the state.
So there's really, and he was able to stand out in the college basketball world despite not having just this massive fan base, this traditional history with the basketball program. Gets to Arkansas, you actually have that. You have more of a fan base. You have more financial backing. And so what he, Mrs. Danielle, and his staff have been able to do is use that to their advantage, and your advantage for that matter, because as fans of Arkansas basketball, let's be honest, you selfishly like seeing yourself in the news. You like seeing recruits love and lavish your program because the head coach, and I just don't think, as we're sitting here about, Musk got hired, I think, last April. Role is one, yeah, because they we had the we talked about that last month, the first year of Arkansas basketball. I don't think we've given her, Mrs. Danielle, enough due of how much credit she deserves at this point in time with the Arkansas basketball program.
No, I think, you know, she's that, also on the social media side that you bring up, she's that buffer, or she's that gatekeeper, if you will, to, for him to bounce ideas off of, but say, all right, no, don't put the brakes on that one there. And because we've heard her talk about that before, but
he's like, yeah, my wife sometimes gets embarrassed by some of the stuff
but
I do.
She does have that media instinct to know what's going to look good, play good, because it's not just what appeals to recruits. That's the majority of it, but it's also what your fan base will latch on to. And that's important. And I think these interviews that the two of them together have done with recruits have been well watched, well excited.
Where else do you see that in college basketball?
And that was my next point, is a lot of the things he's doing, from the pictures with players to the videos to these interviews with recruits, they're unique. And I think that's the number one thing with his social media game, is, you know, a lot of good ideas are just copied, regenerated, retreads, slightly modified from something someone else has done. And I know social media is still fairly new, but most of what you see out there is still an improved upon idea from someone else.
Yeah.
It's regenerated. Most of what we're seeing Musselman do, no one else has done. So anyone else that takes it from him is taking from the originator on this.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly right.
And then he improves upon what he's doing.
We like to make fun of Club Dove, and deservedly so. Do you know where Club Dub originated?
Wasn't it the Chicago Bears?
Chicago Bears, yeah. And everyone was like, oh, this is so awesome. This is so unique. And then I just looked it up on Twitter. I was like, this is a fake. They literally just took it from the Chicago Bears. And unfortunately, that ended up not being what you wanted it to be. But you mentioned the different interviews that they've done together, which have been fantastic. They interviewed all the recruits via Instagram Live. And you think about, and I was thinking about this too, a lot of college basketball writers, analysts, and whoever, they know who Danielle is because she's public, she's visible and stuff. Now, maybe it's because we cover Arkansas basketball pretty exclusively. I could not tell you one coach's wife basketball-wise in the SEC. I couldn't tell you one coach's basketball wife in college basketball. But I guarantee you, if you ask, if you panel most college basketball writers and analysts, one of the first people that they would be mentioned is who? Danielle Musselman. That's a that's not the biggest deal. You're like, well, what does that matter? Well, it's the appearance of everything. It's when, and because that's not just going to get to college basketball people. Who's that going to get to? Recruits. And when they see the relationship that, as you mentioned earlier, that motherly figure type of thing, that's a big deal. Because everyone thinks that, oh, it's just who wants to go play the best basketball program. There's other intangibles involved. Yes, you want great facilities. Yes, you want good tradition. Yes, you want a good coach. But you also want to know that your son is not playing for a psychopath, or your son has someone up there that he can talk to like that.
That there's a counterbalance to the psychopath.
And listen, all coaches are very intense. They get after you. I would not be able to survive a college basketball team, much less probably a practice, if we're being honest. But you, like the family aspect you were talking about, and we heard in that audio clip from Pig Trail Nation that they have and they live out in the Blessings area, and they have that massive pool, massive area. We've seen the video of the Arkansas basketball players coming out there. But this business is a family business. It's not the coach, Eric Musselman, he's the figurehead. He's the big dog. He's the face of the organization. But Michael Musselman's obviously a big deal. You can even say Mariah's like an impactful, Danielle's impactful. It's a combination. That's why it's important to have. That's why it's important. I mean, you know this. Mrs. Laura supports you in every way she can. I hope she doesn't hear that clip. You want to have someone that loves what you're doing and is just as passionate about it as you are. And it seems like that's what you have as the first lady of Arkansas basketball.
This isn't England, right? We don't have royalty in this country. We have kings and queens, but we have icons. You know, we have sports figures, and they're kind of our royalty. Some on bigger scales, some on smaller scales. Michael Jordan is royalty in
basketball.
This country.
Royalty.
He is royalty.
Yes,
and you know, and every kingdom has its little fiefdoms, right? Its little areas. Well, I mean, coaches, particularly in our part of the world, and as much as we celebrate sports, kind of like our royalty. You know, we don't think and revere in this country politicians the way they are in other countries because, you know, they're dictatorships in a lot of places. You know, they still, for whatever reason, even though they have no power, celebrate royalty in the United Kingdom. You could loosely associate, I think, what I'm saying. I think it's a good analogy. We treat our sports stars. We treat our coaches. We wonder why some of these coaches act like they're gods, because we treat them that way. Why do you think Petrino thought a decade ago he could hire a blonde to his staff, hire someone, hire his mistress, put him on a staff, and then go ride around on a motorcycle and get away with it? Why do you think that's a I think I'm God move, right? Why do you think he felt that way?
But he didn't ask for money when he came back to the Little Rock Touchdown Club.
Well, I mean, my point is, they act like gods in a lot of cases because we treat them that way. And that's the point, is it's as close as we get to treating someone like royalty in this country.
There's a difference between putting someone on a pedestal and then putting someone on a golden throne.
Right.
In certain cases, I mean, you can point to Duke fans with Coach K, Kentucky fans with Cal, and you can point to other examples in college basketball, college football with Saban. It's a great point, and that's why there's
certain... You don't think he's treated like a god in that state?
And that's why there's certain...
He's the king.
Yeah, because you feel like you can get away with certain stuff because consistently people are looking at you different ways and in different lenses than the average Joe. That's how it is, and that's why this whole thing going on with the coronavirus is going to be very interesting when salaries are going to be cut, when you're going to have coaches taking pay cuts and stuff, how they're going to react to all of this moving forward.
Well, and, you know, as much as we think of Musselman, his family, the start he's had under one season, let's remember, they were probably not going to make the NCAA tournament if play had continued in mid-March. They got their 20th win, but this was not, you know, this was not like the best results we've ever seen. This isn't like an all-time season at Arkansas. Petrino had turned in some great, the best seasons of our lifetime for many of us, best consecutive seasons in our lifetime for most of the audience. So what are we going to think when he actually does win? And I believe he will at Arkansas. So that's the danger you get, though. I think we put all of these sports figures and these sports icons on too high a pedestal, and we set them up for failure because of the expectations we have of
them. We should just move all the expectation, all the love and stuff, and put that on sports radio hosts that you listen to every
exactly.
day. Just lavish us instead of the
coaches.
Send
those cards and letters to P.O. Box 233. Okay.
So one of the other things that's important with this is likability. And Cowherd always talks about this, how important likability is in sports. Because, I mean, there are certain like Nick Saban, I don't necessarily deem him as a likable guy. I do enjoy him on set, and I could see him eventually taking over for Corso on College Game Day, and that would be something that ESPN should desperately go after when he does decide to hang up the coaching headset and goes, if he does decide to go for the broadcasting headset. But he's not necessarily a likable guy. Now, Bama fans love him because he wins, and again, winning trumps everything, as you mentioned earlier in this segment, but since arriving at Arkansas, we've talked extensively how Eric Musselman, in just 1 year and 1 month, already feels like an Arkansan, already feels like a Razorback. And that's very important to us because as Arkansans, Tommy grew up in the state, I grew up in the state. If you do decide to come and work here, if you do decide to associate with us, we want you to like us and respect the different things that we've had over the years, the different things we've respected. And what has he done since arriving in Arkansas? He's connected with a bunch of former players, Mike Anderson players, Nolan Richardson players, Stan Heath players, John Pelfrey players. What else has he done? He's embraced the culture, the Woo Pig Suey, everything involved with your basketball program. He, Mrs. Danielle, Michael, and everyone involved have latched onto that. They haven't been within arm's distance. They have fully embraced that. So the likability aspect of all that is important, not only for Eric, but Mrs. Danielle as well, because she's been just as big a deal as that, as we're talking about this on Mother's Day weekend, because it's important to mention that.
And you're right, but Mike Anderson embraced everything. Mike Anderson was all in. This was home for him, and it still comes back to winning. You know, but and I don't know how much Petrino enjoyed calling the Hogs. He kind of did it half-heartedly at times, but he won.
Well, that's the point. That's what you have to bring up.
Right.
Yes, this the likability stuff, the embracing the culture, the associating with fans, doing all that
great.
Is important. But at the end of the day, if you win, like the Petrino example is great, because how many times would you just see him rip raw, call the Hogs, very very to himself and stuff? But you know what? He got you to a BCS bowl, and he won football games.
So we didn't care about either of the stuff.
It didn't matter. Yep. So imagine, think about Nolan Richardson. Think about him doing the horns down, one more time horns. Think about everything he did that you loved, on top of what, Tommy? Winning the national championship, going to 3 Final Fours, making Elite Eights. That's why Nolan Richardson is so revered, so loved in this state. Because it was a combo. Not only did he embrace it, being from El Paso, Texas, coming over from Tulsa, but he also combined the winning. And that's why Frank Broyles was also the same way, because he loved every inch of this state. He was never going to leave. And that's so important, because not only did he win, have a high level of success, but he embraced everything about the natural state and the Razorback football program, the basketball program, the baseball program, everything involved, which is why he was such a successful AD over years. The important thing is you need to be like the likability aspects that we're talking about with Mrs. Danielle, Eric, and everyone involved there. That's very important. It's awesome. It's an addition, but at the end of the day, you just got to win.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the cusp of that certain games, and there was games this season you'd love to have back. Mississippi State, Auburn, South Carolina, but you didn't get over. So if you have all this embracement now, as you were talking about, what's it going to look like if they actually make a run to a Sweet 16? Or if they sneak into a Final Four or something like that? If you already have all these Arkansas fans that have hopped on board, which I think if you polled them right now, 95% would say, we're on the must bus. The other five, they're like, we'll wait and see, but we're probably going to hop on eventually. What's it going to look like if they actually start to have tremendous postseason success here? How is that going to translate fan-wise? Because you saw the experience of Arkansas basketball. You saw an old Bud Walness game against Kentucky this year. What happens if that team is undefeated heading into next time they face the Wildcats? We've already like set the bar here. What are you going to see when this team actually does something that you haven't seen since the 90s? It's going to be insane.
Yeah. We have such an appetite, such a starvation for success at that level. That's why we keep pointing back, and all of these type of conversations lead back somewhere to a 2010-2011 football time. In a short-lived era of national prominence, even though you didn't win a division in your league, you didn't win a conference title, you were still relevant on a national level. How long has it been since you were relevant on a national level? Well, mid-90s, 96, the last time you've been to the Sweet 16. You can't be nationally relevant until you're at least getting to the Sweet 16. So, yeah, I mean, this state is starred for basketball success. That's why there are so many fans that have hopped on and are endured to the baseball program right now. Nationally prominent, nationally relevant, well-respected. We crave the respect in this state. And hadn't had it in a while. So you're looking for, you know, you're looking for your Messiah here to take you out of this wilderness you've been in.
Affirmation, we've talked about many times.
For Moses.
This state has a minority complex because of Texas, because of the different funds that people in the SEC love to make fun of Arkansas for various reasons. And so when you do have a guy like Dave Van Horn, as Tommy mentioned, that wins consistently and has you as close to the mountaintop as you can get, you embrace him openly and with full arms. Now you're just waiting on two others to do that. Now you're not going to get I don't know if you'll get the same level of success from either Sam Pittman or Eric Musselman, but you hope it ends up being that way.
And how much better will it be in basketball if Coach Musk gets it done and you got such a likable family and a likable situation and he can win at that level? That, you know, and you know, we started this segment because it's Mother's Day weekend, talking about, you know, the First Lady of Arkansas basketball and Danielle and what she does for this program. How much sweeter will it be and just a better fit? You'll smile a little wider, you know, knowing that you're really happy for their success too, because they're just great people.
Exactly right. I can't disagree with you there.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
What are some of your best mom memories growing up as a kid or just in... Whenever.
You want me to tell my best memory or my mother's best story that she tells?
Either way, you can do that or you can, I mean, Mrs.
You
Laura,
want the one my mom would tell because it's more telling on me.
It's degrading? Okay, then let's go that
a little bit.
One.
I was probably 5 or 6 years old. We grew up.
You wet yourself, didn't you?
That was at 8. we grew up at the end of a cul-de-sac. So we had a dead-end cul-de-sac, which we played all tight. There was about, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... There were 7 houses, I believe, on the street, 1 duplex at the end. Well, about 4 doors up, some people were moving out, and they were renovating the home for the next people to move in. And the painters had left to go to lunch or wherever they went. And me and my brother thought it would be a good idea to help them. They left all their paint, all their brushes, and all their buckets, and all their stuff out. So we thought the brick needed a little coat of paint put on it. So we're 5, 6 years old. We don't know any better. We got those rollers, and we're going to town on this wall over there, going to help them paint it. In my mind, we do our part. We're ready for lunch now. So we go home. Next thing you know, there's a knock on the door, and there is a realtor there, and she is fuming. And her first questions to my mom were, "Do you have a toothbrush?
Well, yeah. Do you have a Brillo pad? Do you have any? And my mom gets fed up with this pretty quick. Says, why are you asking me this? Because your kids, you know, so your kids with their finger pointed have painted the house down the street.
You and daddy.
So, next thing I know, we're in the car getting chewed out. And we're headed
after
to the
Ace. I thought you did a good deed.
I thought we had done great. Now we're headed to the Ace Hardware to get turpentine and paint remover and whatever. And then it starts pouring down rain. Well, we get our butt busted and sent to bed while my mom is in the pouring down rain with a brush and paint remover trying to get this paint off a brick wall so that we don't get sued, I guess.
Jeez Louise.
So then all I could worry about is my dad coming home and getting another round of it. And I remember my dad coming home. This is a favorite part of the story. And my dad says, well, anything happened today? My first response is, yeah, Dad, we went into and out of the painting business all in one day today. That's my mom's favorite story. Tells that story a lot.
I'd say that's pretty good. I don't know if I'm going to be able to top that.
Yeah.
So, Clay, you there, buddy?
I'm here. Right. I was listening. I had a little trouble with our internet. We had storms last night, rained all night.
Okay. Since you're just jumping in now, I'm not going to play your intro, but I'll let you go next. What's your favorite story, either from your mom or just a story of your mom as we enter into Mother's Day weekend?
Well, I've got some that probably will scar some people if I tell it.
Bring it on.
All right. So we lived with our house back in the day. Had a garage carport, but it's not closed in. It's like open on two sides. So you can't put your car, you know, in a garage. Back in the day, that's how a lot of houses were. You didn't have a garage door. You just had a driveway, and, you know, it's... you know, there's a storeroom in the back, but two of the sides are open away from the house. And so my mother had a convertible, and that's where she parked it. Well, in the summertime, she didn't put the top up. You know, she just pull it in and leave the top down. Well, there's a neighborhood cat, and the cat was bad on the convertible anyway. She hated it. It would scratch the top, you know, dig its claws into the top of the convertible and scratch it, you know, the soft cloth, you know, the convertible top. And nobody owned the cat. I mean, it was just a neighborhood cat. It would go from place to place. And so my mom was tired of the cat. Well, the cat had a litter of kittens in the front seat of the cat of the convertible. So she got me up. I think I was 5 or 6. I wasn't in school yet. I don't know if we had preschool at that time. I wasn't in first grade. I knew that. So she gave me a burlap sack, and I held it open, and she put kittens into the burlap sack. And then the last thing she did is put the mama cat in, and then she cleaned up the afterbirth and everything in the front seat and instructed me to get in the back seat. She tied up the burlap sack and said, just sit there. So we drove from Southwest Little Rock. The next thing I know, we're going across the river bridge towards North Little Rock, and we get in the middle of the bridge. She says, stand up in chunk.
That's not the ending I was expecting.
And so me, the 6-year-old, did its best heave-ho out the back of the convertible over the railing of the bridge, and there went the cats. You know, you heard the story of the cat that came back. These didn't come back.
Jeez, Clay.
Life was tough back then.
Yep. Didn't have as many cats in the neighborhood after that.
Mike.
Anyone expected that ending? I did not expect that ending. That's an ironic finish to the story.
I'm laughing.
Ironic? I mean, it was a...
I don't know whether... Maybe I don't have the right word here.
Hey, we'll just say the end of that finish was all wet, right?
Yeah.
Man, that cat, I guess those cats didn't have 9 lives.
No, they didn't. No, the kittens didn't make it a day. Don't want more like that?
I'm good on that in that category.
Yep. Yeah. For all the cat lovers out there, my mom did not hate cats, but
loved the convertible.
that definitely, yeah, I learned a lesson that, you know, we later had a cat. But it, you know, the my dad actually got on to her and he says, if you'd put the top of the convertible, that wouldn't happen. You know, if you do that. I'm not sure that conversation went real well that night, but anyway. me and my brothers, we were all like, that night, says, what did you do with the bag of cats? And I said, well, I chunked them.
Man, Jeremiah in Fort Smith says, happy Mother's Day. Got a text out of the 870, said, that got dark real quick. Yeah. Clay, of all the
stuff.
That's
like that thunderstorm that rolled over your house.
Clay, of all the stories that quick. I thought you were going to tell in this segment about Mother's Day, that would have been the most unlikely of them all. But our entertainer, our listeners, they now have something to take away on Mother's Day as we continue on with this conversation. My goodness.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
All right, Drew, you called Clay out a little bit. You have a Mother's Day story. Are you going to be able to follow up Clay's, man?
Man, after hearing Clay's, I was like, I better hurry up and call before we have to hear another one. I don't like cats. I don't know if I've ever done anything like that. That's pretty wild. But whenever I was a kid, man, my mom, she coached me in baseball since I was about 12 years old. And I'm talking, she'd hit infield at home plate with the glove on one hand and the bat in the other. She'd just catch the ball, throw it up, smoke it with the bat. So she hits it to the third baseman. He kicks it around. She's like, it's okay, Johnny. She goes around the whole infield. She smokes one at me, and it goes right off my shin. Next thing I know, I'm just running laps. Every single time we would do infield as a kid, everybody else could kick the ball around, and it was okay. As soon as I'd kick it around, we'd just start running laps. I didn't get to hit until I was like 13 in practice because she just wouldn't let me hit. She just had me running laps.
The joys of coaches or parents as coaches, Drew. Am I right?
Yeah, about 2 months ago, we went back into the house and we were cleaning out a closet, and we busted out our coach uniform. It was old Cleveland Indian spring training tops. I started having flashbacks. I was like, I want out of the house. Get all the balls away from me right now, please.
Because it's usually the father in the household is a little more upfront and a little more intense. But Drew, it sounds like your mom was kind of she took the charge as far as that goes, man.
Drew, did y'all call her Boilermaker?
It wasn't trying to put my dad's standards in sports or my brother's standards in sports. It was trying to be as good as my mom was, and that was never going to happen.
Yeah.
Man, well, Drew, appreciate the call, man. That's a pretty good one. Gosh,
athlete of the family.
You think about taking a ball off the bat to the shin. That does not sound pleasant right now at all. So, kudos for Drew. Good story from him. If you have a story about Mother's Day, as we're entering Mother's Day weekend, get in here, 877-377-6963. So I touched on kind of just my appreciation for my two moms earlier, and I want to share a story about both. So my mom passed away when I was 7 years old, so I don't have the memories I have, they're very small just because as a kid you can't remember as much stuff. But I remember when I was a kid, and I don't remember how many old, we were playing in the backyard, and I had a couple friends over, and one of my friends' mom was also there, and we were playing baseball or playing stickball or something in the backyard, and just we're having a great time and stuff, and then they're talking about having to run errands and that we got to go with us because we can't stay at home, right? Because we're 4, 5, or 6 years old. This isn't like in 1950 when you let kids do that or whatever, but... So I'm frustrated. My brother's frustrated. Our friends are frustrated because we're like, we want to keep playing. We're having a great time. And so there's like, we're going to go to Kmart. We got to do this. We got to do that. And so we're just whining and moaning the whole car ride there. And instead, my mother had a surprise for us, and she took us to Chuck E. Cheese instead. So as we're complaining and just reading her the riot act and stuff, the entire time, her entire plan and... I think it was Mrs. Jolinda, who was my friend's mom. They planned on to take us to Chuck E. Cheese. And so I felt really bad when we got there, and I gave her a hug, and I was like, thank you so much. Thank you for being my mom. And then blah, blah, blah. Another memory of her that stands out. So my dad was definitely the stricter one of the family when it came to video games. And I remember asking my dad one time if I could play this computer game in his office. And he was like, no. So I went to mom and I was like, hey, can I play this? And she was like, sure. And so later kind of like you were talking about with the candy clay, my dad actually walks in later. It's like, what are you doing? I said, you couldn't play. I was like, well, I asked mom. She said I could. And then and he just shakes his head. It's like, get off the computer. I said no. And then I just avoided that. But he's like, don't. If you can't ask one parent one thing, and the other parent the same thing. And then as far as my stepmom goes, a lot of you listening right now, you probably have some sort of a stepsister, stepbrother, half-brother, or some type of relationship. But many of you know the combining of families is very tough initially because you have different brothers and sisters that are accustomed to one thing over the years with their parents, and then you combine it with another. And so I was presented at – I was telling Tommy about this yesterday – the worst time a boy can be presented with a new mom and new sisters is what? Middle school.
Yeah, it's got to be 10, 12, 13 years old.
Which is about, and I'm forgetting the exact age I was when my dad and my stepmom got married, but that was right in the weirdest time of my life, which is middle school. And so I all of a sudden have these three new sisters and a new mom running around, which I've never had, being a guy with just a brother's entire life. So we did not get along at all for the first couple years. Love her now. She's the one of the best things that happened to my dad. She I have great sisters. I call them sisters, so, even though they're my stepsisters. But
you tested the marriage early on.
I did, yeah. And I will say my brother's a little more low-key about it, but, I mean, you guys listening right now know that, obviously, as a sports talk radio host, I tend to argue about stuff, and that was very prevalent in this time because I'm having to deal with all this crap of a new marriage, new sisters, and all that. But I will say this, and again, I am so thankful for my three sisters and my mom and my stepmom. So I don't know if I'll ever be able to call her mom, but I'm eternally grateful from God for putting another great woman in my life and three sisters. I've talked about on this show that I was a knucklehead right at the beginning of school. Mm-hmm. Got popped not a month into college, not a couple months into college, the first week of college. And a little backstory, I was an angel child. In high school, outside of the argument with my parents. Didn't smoke, didn't do drugs, didn't do drink, didn't do anything. 4.0.
Never been in trouble.
4.0. The only trouble I had was like the slightest. Had very strict, my parents were very strict on us in high school. I was a good kid. Good kid. Well, get to college, beer everywhere. First week, popped. MIP, going to jail. I have to call my dad the next morning. And I will be eternally grateful because my dad wanted me to come home from college. But my stepmom convinced him to let me stay. Then, fast forward about 9 months, and the what we had agreed upon, guys, is no drink until you turn 20. Okay, that lasted for about 3 months, and then I got back into it because I'm an idiot. They found out 2 weeks before I go to sophomore year. Once again, my dad's like, I'm not paying for this crap. You're being an idiot. You're going to come home. My stepmom convinces him, let him go to school, let him finish this out. Do not have a sip of alcohol until I turn 21. Then just kind of did whatever after that. But as we are here on May 8th, as we enter Mother's Day weekend, I am very grateful for my stepmom convincing my dad, who did not want me to go back to school at the U of A because I was acting like a dumbass, to let me stay in school. Because I guarantee you, Tommy, you probably wouldn't have hired a guy that didn't have a college degree. I'm going out on a limb and just going to guess that. It's not like this broadcast journalism degree from the University of Arkansas is like magna cum laude from Harvard. Yeah. But it does hold up a little bit when it comes to sports radio and the practice of hiring.
I just think the best part of the story is you go from Little Rock Christian, 4.0 student, angel boy out in West Little Rock, wearing your little polo shirts, going to Chenal Country Club, you know, living the high life, to getting arrested the first weekend of college.
And that's
the best part of the story is you got to call dad the first weekend of college. Hey, I'm in the slammer.
My conversation was not. And listen, and I know that everyone has a perception of sports radio host, TV or whatever, but I cannot stress enough to everyone listening right now, 4.0 student, didn't drink, didn't smoke. I was the perfect kid outside of a few arguments. I sucked at sports, and I really didn't have much of a social. But I did not do anything in high school that really pissed my parents off. Outside
you go
of
to the pokey weekend one.
I was like, yeah, and so that conversation with my father, as you can imagine, was not that pleasant.
I guarantee you, he was as ill prepared for that as you were.
Yeah, because he had to ask me. I was like, Dad, I got an MIP. He said, What? It's like, I got an MIP. Yeah. He literally had to ask, what is that? And initially, he thought it was drugs. So I was like, no, Dad, I got arrested with alcohol. And he's the worst part of that story. And I know this on Mother's Day, we're timed this morning, the father. He's like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm sitting there.
That's the worst.
I'm sitting there next to my sister, Claire, who had brought me a Gatorade that I chugged in about a minute because of how drunk I was the night before. Just sitting there like,
He had the drive from Little Rock to Fayetteville.
No. So Claire lived up in Fayetteville. She had just graduated college. She had a job in Fayetteville. Claire had to come pick me up. First thing she said, you got to call Dad. No. And so, again, tied it all back to the conversation we started with mothers. I had a great mom, and I have a great stepmom. And I'm eternally grateful for both of them, obviously. I wish our mom was still with us, but I understand why God did it, because I have a perfect stepmom. Not a perfect, but an awesome stepmom.
You should have stopped at perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, now you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, now three great sisters. So,
good story.
A little different from Clay's story, a little different from Tommy's story. But
No one went over the bridge in your story.
Yeah, I'm just surprised I didn't tear up during that segment. Yeah. So luckily, I've not cried yet during a radio segment. This was testing it a little bit.
We're getting a lot of good text about mom stories as well.
Yeah.
Someone from PETA is wanting to talk to Clay. We're holding them off, Clay. We're fending them off right now.
Missy from New Hope says, tired for y'all not saying my name. Missy, we'll give you a shout out here. So I wanted to do that. What?
Jenkins is running defense here.
I'm running defense. It's a hysterical story, but JT in Hot Springs prefaced that. He said, we might not need to.
Well, you can. I won't say it then. So it will put your job on the line.
No, brother.
He quickly offered that up.
No, it's a funny story, but I ain't. No.
So you guys,
I got more to lose than you.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. So we got about 10 more minutes of this segment. Do we want to keep going with mom stories, or do we want to switch it up and talk to Sam Pittman? This is a sports show. I'm letting y'all.
All right, Clay.
Y'all want my M&M story, don't you?
I thought you told that already.
He told us
that was during the break.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
I'll be quick.
Do the M&M story, Clay, because we got to call her in a sec.
So I'm about 3 years old. Went to Kroger's with my mom. We're in the checkout line, and I said, "Can I have some M&Ms?" And she's like, "No, no candy, no M&Ms." And so when she turned back around, I just stuck them in my coat pocket, my jacket. And so we got home. And I wasn't smart enough to take them in the backyard and eat them. I went to my room, and she walked in and says, I told you we weren't buying any M&Ms. And at first she thought I'd stuck them in the basket and we had bought them. And then she went back and looked at the receipt and realized I had not paid for them. I'd stolen. And so I got a whipping with a belt. My mom had never whipped with the belt. That was usually what my dad did. But I got a whipping. And then we had to go back to the store, and I had to tell the store manager that I had stolen, and then he handed me a broom, and I had to sweep an aisle. Remember, I'm like three. I couldn't hardly do it.
So this would have been, what, 1958 or so?
Yeah, 57, 58, right, somewhere in there.
Just the beginning of the rambunctious Clay Henry that we've seen later
in life. So then we got home, and then I thought, oh, now that wasn't so bad. This is over. And then my dad got home, and I got another whipping. So
it's like when you get one at school. You get one.
Well, I didn't touch M&Ms for a long time. I mean, they were the forbidden fruit as far as I was concerned. Wanting an M&M would get you in trouble.
Maybe this dates me back. I don't remember getting double spanked. I think it just...
Anytime
you stole M&Ms, though, did you?
Anytime you got one at school, though, you were going to get one at home. But you grew up in an era they didn't do it at school.
I probably should have.
Yeah.
But again, I was an angel kid for the most part growing up, and then just college, man, I guess. So
they did it for recreation when I was in grade school.
I always joke.
Thought it was fun.
I always joke with my parents, and I hopefully spanking will still be allowed when I'm a parent because I think it was important for my development. But I always tell my parents, and I always joke with them, with my stepmom and my dad's like, I'm going to have some sort of disciplinary stuff. I'm just not going to be as strict as you are. Because I always like to joke with them. I was like,
that's where you go wrong. I mean, you should do exactly. You turned out good. You should do exactly what they. You should just beat the crap out of them. Yeah.
Jeez. Okay. All right. I guess we'll keep up with these.
Go to jail. Cats in the river. Kids get spankings. Yeah. That's the way it should be.
You'll go to jail for the second time.
New mantra in the morning rush. Cats in the river. Kids get spankings. Good grief. All right. Let's keep the mom stories going. PA and Texarkana has a good mom story. PA, you go ahead, man.
Good morning, guys. Show you the difference between generations. I'm 60 years old. I'm close to Clay's age. You might be older, might be a little younger. I don't know. Anyway.
You're younger. Yep.
I had tried to read my mom the Riot Act, the first two words out of my mouth. It would have been a backhand, and we'd have turned around and went back home. Guarantee you. And, I didn't talk back to my mom. You just didn't do that. Yeah. My mom was a good person. She still is. She's 90 years old, and she's still making it. And she lives by herself, and she takes care of herself. She's a full-blooded German woman. She's not from Germany. She's full-blooded German from South Texas. She's just a tough lady. Was a good looking woman when she was young, still good looking to me. I love her to death, but she was responsible for carrying me and my brother because we didn't have a baseball team in the little town we lived in during the summertime. We didn't have a summer league like most larger cities do. I lived in a little town called Stevens. She drove us to Camden every day during the summer to go to baseball practice, to and fro, both of us, whenever we needed it, to go to practice. And she was at every game, and she was just there, and it's kind of choking up here, every time we needed her. And she's 9 years old, and she's still making it. Man, I tell you what, I just don't know what I'd do without her when she passes. It's going to be a toughie, and anyway, I have some special plan for Sunday, and anyway, I just wanted to point out the difference in generations. You know, and I'm not saying this one way that's better than the other. You know, so you know, you turned that good, Ty, and I think I turned that pretty good too. So
thanks, PA.
Anyway,
yep, good story, PA. Good stuff, PA.
Yeah. Yeah, appreciate your call, and hope you and your mom have a great Mother's Day weekend.
That was fantastic. I think we've the mother stories that we've told so far on this program, and PA, appreciate your call. They've been anywhere from the funny stories with the paint, Clay's Eminem and his cat story, and then PA and me also kind of shared a more emotional story. Because, like, I know Father's Day is a big deal, and my father's been very instrumental in my life, but there's like an added level because, Father, I know you care about Father's Day, but mothers care about it more because typically you're just more emotional and stuff. So you want to make sure that they feel extra special. And the way I look at it is I have some friends whose mom and them aren't on good terms. They don't have great relationships. And so I treasure and I value my relationship with my mom for the years I did have her here. And then my relationship with my stepmom because I've seen different relationships, whether it's son and mother, daughter, mother, step, half, wherever, that just aren't as solid and they're just not as good. And so that makes you value it even more when you see stuff like that. And PA also pointed out that the generation thing, like he was probably parented a lot different than the way I was parented.
Yeah.
That doesn't make one way right or wrong. It just means they're different. And there's levels of appreciation from both sides, mine, his, and everyone else listening right now.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always great when you can think about your mom and think about it and you smile, you know, physically smile because you're thinking about a great story or, you know, mom teaching me to cook something and I wish I could really get her chicken spaghetti down as well as she does, her baked beans. You know, you just think about those things, and then you really appreciate when you get older in life being able to have a different kind of relationship that evolves over time as you become an adult, and things just become different in the relationship. But you always have that mom to go back when you need someone to talk to. You need that advice.
And I think the levels of parenting, guys, is like my dad was reading me, and someone was reading me this thing. It was like, you're the dictator when they're growing up, like as a kid. You loosen up when they get into middle school and high school. You still are like the parent in college, but then you're kind of like the transition into the advice giver.
Yep.
After they graduate. Because I was
the sounding board.
I was joking about with you on this on Thanksgiving, because my dad was like, you're not wearing a hat to church on Thanksgiving. I was like, Dad, I love you, but I'm wearing a hat. You know why? Because I'm no longer in your house anymore. Like I don't have to necessarily, like listen, I love your advice. I'm glad you're giving it to me. But that doesn't necessarily mean
I
have to follow it.
Did you say hat to church?
Yes.
You don't wear a hat to church.
Yes. And well, no, that's wrong. One church. It was Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay.
One
Thanksgiving dinner. You don't wear a hat.
I don't wear a hat to church. That's a bad, and I'm not just saying
Anybody
that.
Disagree with
that?
I legitimately don't
wear a hat to church, but I did wear it to Thanksgiving dinner that day, and he wasn't too happy. But that's the role you transition over the years. Yeah. As you go from dictator to president to. You just transition over this,
yeah.
And then it's more of advice giver, and you appreciate their advice.
He advised
more.
You not to wear that
advised,
hat to the Thanksgiving table.
That doesn't mean I have to. I took it off at the Thanksgiving table. I just when we were in the house and stuff, because I didn't want to have to.
And you probably had it on backwards too.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, exactly.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.